The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Tara, thank you very much. But my next guest is aiming to be the first person with a spinal cord injury to walk across the United States. Now, that's happening in August, and it's all in the name of raising money for Spinal Injuries Ireland. Former Connacht rugby player Fergus Farrell has had quite the journey to get to this point, and he joins me now. Fergus, you're very welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.
I don't know where to start with this story, but I think we might go to what caused the injury in the first place, because it was such a mundane thing, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It was just a simple act of lifting a metal bench. It was no more than 60 or 80 kgs. And I ruptured my T9, T10, and the T10 went through my spinal cord and severed by 90%. And as I said, it was a life-changing incident in a split second.
Mm-hmm.
I've come out at the good side of it.
Well, you walked in here today.
Yeah, and that's a privilege and something that people take for granted every day. Every step they take it for granted.
Were you told that you wouldn't walk again? Like, what were you facing?
So, a couple of days after having the operation done, the surgeon sat down beside me and said, "Look, at 72 hours, if you get movement, you have a 5% chance of regaining some sort of strength."
5%.
Yeah, they didn't say walking. And if 72 hours pass by and you have nothing, your stats have gone to 0%.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, I fought for those 72 hours and. Yes, I did walk in here, but I didn't get any movement after 72 hours. It was 21 days later, and I always remember that moment. 2:30 at night, I moved that big right toe. Now, I moved it by a fraction, but as I said, from there on out, I had something to latch onto. And you know yourself, when you have a progress, you can stay motivated and you can stay fighting. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. You were doing that visualisation of switching a light on, weren't you, when you were there in the bed?
Yeah, I was. Because look, all I had is I was completely paralysed. I'd lost my centre of gravity, I'd lost my bowels, my bladder, and I was being looked after by a team of amazing people. But all I could use was my head at the time, you know. I didn't have any physical, I had my arms, but I couldn't move in the bed. So I had to use the tools I had in my box, and one of those tools was visualisation, something that I used all my life, but I didn't realise how powerful it was. And because I was lying in the bed, I could do nothing else but visualise. So every waking moment I had, which was a lot of waking moments because the pain was horrific, and the pain is still horrific to this day, but I kept visualising, and trying to make that connection, trying to repair that broken spinal cord with I won't go into how I went into doing it, but like ultimately 21 days later, it moved. And I do put it down to that process of visualisation and working hard and not giving up.
You're still in pain, are you?
Yeah, 24/7. I take a lot of medication to keep myself, hide the pain. But it's constantly there. It doesn't leave me. It's like severe pins and needles throughout my whole body. Throughout my whole lower body.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, at night it's worse because once I take the pressure off my feet, the pain increases. But look, that's not something I worry about because I can't do anything about it, number one. And number two is if I concentrate on that, it'll lead me down the wrong path.
Yeah, I can see your logic there. So going back to you start to regain the movement and you start to heal, then you have to go through the rehab and all you wanted to do was get home.
Yeah.
I'm going to get home now. That's going to be my focus.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you got home, things didn't work out great there either.
Yeah, and look, it was my own fault, you know. One thing why I thought everybody worried about me up in Dublin because I was the person with the injury. But who was looking after my kids and my ex-wife down in Galway? Like nobody, because, you know, that's just the way it was. And ultimately, when I got home, I had no more challenges left my mind. So my mind came very empty and it started filling up with so many negative thoughts. Plus the medication was absolutely turning me into somebody I hadn't a clue who I was. But I was living it. And even to this day, I look back and I go, man, I was such a different character. But again, I needed that medication to do what I did.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have that medication, I don't know whether I would have got back on my feet or would have had been able to keep fighting. So it was a necessary evil.
Yeah, and your marriage ended at that time, didn't it?
It did, yeah, unfortunately. And down to myself, you know, because at the end of the day, my wife is a good person, and she is still a good person, and she's a great mother. So, look, it is what happened. I can't change that, unfortunately.
So then when did you start taking on these sort of fitness type challenges? Like, what was that? Was that trying to find something else to aim for?
So I ended up not wanting to be here 7 weeks after walking out of doors with NRH after being told, you know, it's not possible. So people on the outside seeing this person who was beating the impossible. But behind it all, I was wearing that mask and I was struggling behind it. The business was failing, my marriage was failing, my poor kids, because I've been away from them so long, you know, hadn't a really great connection with them, especially my six-month-old son.
How long has you been away for?
From about 7 months. Yeah, seven months. But then obviously I got home and I was only home for a short period of time, and unfortunately I had to move out of the house. And so there's more than just the 7 months. And ultimately, I didn't want to be here for a period of time. And thankfully, a relationship saved me in that moment. But when I went into the psychiatric ward, I got that time to declutter what was going on in my head, because I had peace, I had quietness, I had no phones, no technology, nothing around me. And I just said to myself, if I don't sort out myself right now and figure out what's going on in my head, I'm going to be back in here again in a month's time. So I took that time out and I really dug deep to find out what's going on in my life.
So did you end up in that psychiatric unit only 7 weeks after you came out of the rehabilitation?
Yep.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, you were upside down and backways at that point, right?
Yeah, well, I know the power of the mind now, of when it's very positive what I can do, and I know the power of the mind when it's very negative what I can do as well, in a very short period of time. And I didn't believe in any of this. I didn't believe in mental health. I didn't believe in stress. I didn't believe in any of those type of things when I was building my business and before this accident, because I didn't have time to understand them. So I said, when I was in that ward, I discovered I need challenge and competition in my life. That's what makes me. That's what makes me get up out of my bed every morning. And I did that throughout my whole life, but I didn't realize I was doing it. And so when I came out with NRH...
I suppose it makes total sense, doesn't it? With the rugby and, you know, with building a business and so on. And even with your desire to get out of rehab and get home, you always had to see a thing that you needed to get to.
Yeah, to aim for, to reach for. But when I got out, I didn't. And that's why I ended up in that ward. So when I discovered this, I said, when am I going to be the happiest? What's going to make me happy? And I went back to a part of my life when I was like maybe 17 to 21, 22. I was so happy. Why was I so happy? It wasn't just around the sport. It was just I had time for people and I had time to develop relationships and have fun and enjoy life. I said, that's what I need to replicate again. That's where I need to be. I don't want to be back to the ratty Fergus that I was when I was building a business, because I didn't have time for people. So I made a plan. I did that. And one of the plans was to create a challenge. And that challenge was to walk across the country 1 year after my accident, 206 kilometres. And at that stage, I could only walk about 300 metres. So I set a mammoth challenge.
Yeah. It's crazy, really.
Well,
I'd say you had plenty of people around you who said, will you stop?
Yeah, well, I told NRH, because I was fundraising for the NRH, and they brought me up and set me down in this room, and I'll never forget it. The consultant here was there, Emer, and physio and occupational therapy, and they're all sitting around and they're saying, why are you doing this? And I said, well, I want to raise money for the NRH, and I need to do it for myself as well to help my progress, because I was still only stumbling on my feet. It wasn't like I was walking like I walked in here today.
Yeah.
And and they were like going, don't do it.
Every time
they were saying don't do it, I was going, I'm doing it. You know? So they kind of, even by the end of the meeting, they were like going, okay, best of luck.
So when was that? When did you do that
walk?
That
was, so we did it from the 22nd of October, and I walked in through the doors of the NRH on the 26th of October, exactly 1 year after I entered it.
Mm-hmm. And what year was that?
2019.
Yeah. So that's when you completed that challenge. And how were you doing it? You must have been in bits, were you?
Yeah, I was. And like, this is the part I take from it. It wasn't a physical thing that I enjoyed so much. When I look back, and it was the people who did it with me. They carried me across the country. You know, and I really did, you know, the chats along the way, and people opened up to me because they obviously knew I had struggles, so they felt they could open up to me a little bit. And I absolutely loved that. And they were the same people I thought didn't want me, love me or value me.
Because of everything that had happened.
Yeah, yeah, because I was such a dark place. You know, you're only thinking negative. But when I walked across that country, I was just like, I was at the top of the world again. It made me feel amazed because, you know, relationships is what binds us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something we also neglect.
So then after that's 2019, what was the next challenge then?
2019, after that then, well, the next big challenge was obviously trying to row across the North Atlantic Ocean with Damien Brown in 2022.
That didn't go so well.
No, it didn't. In hindsight, you know, I took it on a little bit too early. Didn't factor in the pain threshold that I would be suffering from as well, on top of lack of sleep. Obviously, the exertion of the challenge, nutrition, you know, all those type of things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but I learned a lot from it.
And being in that confined space as well with your injury and what you're dealing with probably wasn't the wisest thing to take on, was it?
No, but I felt like I was bulletproof again.
Yeah.
To be telling you the truth. And I wanted to show the world that, you know, no matter what happens to you, you can do things.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, it was a little bit step too far for me. But look, I gave it a go. I got 1,000 kilometres in. I got into the Gulf Stream. Not many people can say that. But when I failed at, I always use the word fail. When I failed at it, it felt like my world crumbled again. Because I was after letting down so many people. We were going for a world record. We were on pace for the world record. But then I failed, and it really did. I suffered more so after the road than I did after getting out of the NRH.
How did you cope with that?
Day by day, step by step. But ultimately, after about a year of really fighting, trying to get out of this dark hole I was in, I managed to, for the first time in this whole journey, I put my hand up and asked for help. Simple as. And I went to my local doctor and he helped me. He gave me antidepressants, and ultimately they didn't work with me because of the clash with the other tablets I was on with. But then I went back to him and said, look at Philip, this is not working. He put me inside. He got me into counselling. I had 5 or 6 sessions of counselling. I was back.
Mm-hmm.
I realised, you know, what was going on. I started looking at life in a completely different way in terms of looking at what I did rather than what I didn't do, which I should have been better at. Because definitely one of the things I learned in the NRH was to appreciate everything that you could do rather than being envious of everything you can't do.
And I just wonder, because it sounds to me like you're going from, you know, huge challenge to huge challenge.
Mm.
Are you dealing with what happened to you? Do you know what I mean? Are you taking the time to say, this huge thing happened to me and I'm here now? Or are you trying to climb a mountain all of the time?
That's a good question, Claire.
I'm sure that's come up for you, though, in the counselling and the different work that you've done on yourself.
Actually, it hasn't really.
There you go. What a can of worms we've opened.
Yeah, exactly. It hasn't really. No, I'm in a really good place, you know. But that understanding of asking for help and not being hiding behind that mask has really changed me for the better. Because I now know, you know, help is there when you need it. And it doesn't matter whether it's small or big, but it's there and people love to help.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand this big thing with the stigma around asking for help is a weakness, because I know if somebody asks me for help, I'm only delighted to help.
Yeah, but you would have been that person who wouldn't have asked for help.
I was 100% that person.
So tell me about the new challenge then in August.
Yeah. So I'm going to walk from Brooklyn Bridge, New York, all the way over to Santa Monica Pier, Los Angeles, 4,500 kilometres. And I'm aiming for 75 days by 60 kilometres. Now, I'm not holding myself to that. If it takes me 85 days, 90 days, that's all that matters, is that I get it done. Mm-hmm. I'm not setting any world records or anything like that. I will be the first person with a spinal cord injury to ever come to contemplate doing this, which is beautiful. But I'm not, like, it's all about just completing this journey. It's that understanding, step by step by step, you'll get there.
So you're not holding yourself to a specific time. I know you said what the aim is, but if that doesn't happen, you'll just keep going.
That's just to have a target, so I'll keep pushing myself. Mm-hmm. It's not, if I have to take a day because of blisters, whatever else, you know, whatever it may be, if I need to take a day to recuperate, I'm going to do that, because it's not about being supreme or anything. It's not about that. It's about just understanding that it's a journey. Life is a journey. If you're in a dark hole, that's why I'm hoping that people, you know, especially with the spinal injuries community, that if they're in a place that they understand this, if they take the first step and the next step and the next step, nobody will actually realise which was the most important step, but they all count.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do with this journey. I'll be doing 80,000 steps a day. That's one dot on the map. By 75 days, that's 6 million steps. And next thing, I'm across America. And that's just life. You know what I mean? All
and are there any medics saying to you, Fergus, that you shouldn't do this? Would you think twice about it?
I didn't ask.
Did you not?
No,
you don't have to ask anymore,
no,
do you
no,
not?
No, no, no. I know. It's one step in front of the other. I'm not running it. I'm not, you know, it's not an extreme thing. It's time consuming. It will be sore on my joints, but the recovery nutrition is the most key thing here for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, again, I've learned from the last challenge I did, is I need social outlet. I need to be meeting people. I need visual impact. I need to have good nutrition. I need to have a bed every night for my recovery, because I don't sleep much. I only sleep max 3 to 4 hours a night because of the pain. So that's another element that, you know, we have to factor in. So I factor those in into this walk, to making sure that it gives me the best possible chance of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, like, I suppose I've really taken the time out to understand myself a whole lot better than I ever have.
And you're raising money for Spinal Injuries Ireland. Yeah, that's the plan. Shaking a bucket across America.
Shaking a bucket. And look, we're going for a big number. We're going for €1 million, because this is a once in a lifetime thing. And you know, some of the spinal injury community deserves every little bit of it, because ultimately the government only supports the Spinal Injuries Ireland by 30%. Everything else has to be raised.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I wouldn't be here only for the service that Spinal Injuries Ireland provide. And I think it's absolutely critical that they get as much funding as possible to provide money to give those services to people, to integrate them into society, to make them feel valued and wanted.
So you need individual people to sponsor you, to throw money into the bucket, as I said, and corporate sponsors, the whole works. And you have a website. I was on your website last night. So can people, I'm sure that people can find links on there to donate.
It's very easy on it. You can click on the amount of kilometres you want to donate to, and the value you want to donate. And that's on FergusWalks.ie. And like, all fairness now, like, this again wouldn't be possible without Spinal Injuries Ireland and Crown, who have come on board to support us, and Crown are backing the costs of this endeavour. So every few pound that's raised through the website is going directly to Spinal Injuries
Ireland. Well, that's good to hear. So it's FergusWalks.ie if you want to help Fergus out. It's happening in August. How are you training, Fergus? What do you have to do?
So it's time and feet. So yesterday I did 32 kilometres. Tomorrow I'll be probably doing about 40 kilometres. So ultimately what I'm building up to before I go is to do 10 60 kilometre days in a row. Because ultimately you can't train for 75 days. You know what I mean? You can only prepare a certain amount. So it's time and feet. The psychological side of things is something that I've really begun. We did our familiarisation trip 2 weeks ago to see the route, to visualise it. Because again, I do a lot of things through visualisation. And it's really opened up, you know, what I need to physically and mentally prepare for. And yeah, it's
more than a few jelly babies needed to get you across the line. Fergus, thanks so much for coming in, and I wish you the very best. We'll keep in touch with you in August. We'd love to chat to you as you go through the route. We might keep you going for a kilometre or two.
That'd be great.
With a chat.
Every bit appreciated.
Fergus Farrell there, and you can have a look at Fergus's website, FergusWalks.ie. Back after this.
The Clare Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.